Welcome to Chinuch 2.0, a show about the massive changes happening to how we do Chinuch, some of which may never be the same again. Today's show, we speak about an idea to help solve the crisis of yeshiva tuition. It's a favorite topic of mine, and we interview a man who has a plan that can drastically reduce or even eliminate tuition entirely, if only the schools would be willing to go along with the idea. Our guest today is Jeff Kirschblum, who is a business consultant and who realized that the problem of yeshiva tuition is only getting worse. According to his findings, the cost of private school tuition, yeshivas and day schools very much included, is growing at twice the rate of inflation, which means that if the cost of living increases 2% a year, tuition will increase 4 to 5% a year. This means that the cost of tuition would double every 7 to 10 years. So if tuition costs $12,000 a year on average now, it's going to be $25,000 or more in just about 10 years. I don't need to tell you that most people's salaries are not going to double in that same time frame. The percentage of a family's income that goes to tuition keeps on getting higher and higher, which is unsustainable in the long run. The high cost of tuition has many negative side effects. It forces women into the workplace even when they don't want to work. It causes tremendous stress on the family's finances, which in turn causes a stress on the marriage. But here's probably one of the biggest impacts of high tuitions. Unfortunately, it's become a very effective form of birth control. Yes, there are many families who consciously choose to have less children than they otherwise would simply because they can't see themselves affording all those tuitions. To blame the schools is foolish. Even with these high tuitions, the schools struggle terribly. Most yeshivas, tuition doesn't even come close to covering their budgets. And they have to supplement it with very aggressive fundraising, as I'm sure you're all well aware. The problem is only getting worse, and something needs to be done about it now. Hashem doesn't give us a challenge that we can't solve ourselves. There is a solution out there. We just have to be willing to look for one. Our guest has come up with a plan that solves this very issue. As you'll hear, according to his plan, tuition can be significantly reduced to a point where it is no longer a severe burden on most families. And the money for all this is already available. Jeff is a man after my own heart. He doesn't work in a yeshiva. He isn't hired by any yeshiva. He just saw a problem and decided to put his Yiddish cup to work and attack the problem head on. During the interview, we discussed the general idea of his plan because it's not the place to delve into the fine details. But for those who want to see more, you can access it from the link in the show notes at chinuchshow.com. Before we go to our guest, I just want to say one thing about him. The fact that Jeff has a great idea is not what makes him special. Lots of people have good ideas, and some of them are quite good. But what makes Jeff unique is that not only did he have a good idea, but he puts intense effort into bringing his plan to fruition. And that's what sets him apart from everyone else. Lots of people just like to complain and throw their ideas on other people to do. But Jeff actually put the work in to make sure his plan happens. If you have a good idea for solving the tuition crisis, or any other issue facing our community, you have a chiyuv not to keep it to yourself. Put in the hard work to make sure your voice is heard. Don't stand by silently when the building is burning down. Speak up and be heard. Now let's go to our interview with Jeff Kirschblum. We're speaking with Jeff Kirschblum. He's a business consultant in Muncie, and he's the one who started the Rebbe Life Insurance Initiative about 10 years ago, that Rebbeim should have life insurance through the yeshiva. And he also is the creator of the Jewish Educational Endowment Fund, or JEEF for short, whose purpose is to secure an affordable Jewish education for our children. Welcome, Jeff.
How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Good evening.
Good evening. Let's start first by discussing the problem that you're coming to solve. What is the problem, the crisis that Jewish education is facing that your fund is coming to address?
Okay. The major problem is that the high cost of yeshiva tuition. After speaking to so many people and reading so many different articles, the number one argument in households between husband and wife is over money. And the biggest expense that one has is sending the kids to yeshiva. The yeshiva bills have gotten so astronomically high that in some cases, they've priced themselves out of the market, and people are finding other ways to educate their children via homeschool. Some, in worst case scenarios, have sent their kids to public school. And what we're trying to do is make yeshiva tuition affordable.
So talk about how the cost of yeshiva tuition impacts both families that are below the poverty line and even families that are middle class or even well-to-do.
Well, it's, you know, I liken this to a story of someone who makes $150,000 a year. He had approached the board, and this is a true story. He had approached the board asking for a reduction in tuition. And the guy said, okay, just, you know, it's roughly how much do you make? And the guy told him, he's embarrassed to say, but he makes $150,000 a year. So the guy on the board looked at him like he was crazy. You have the nerve, the chutzpah, to ask for a reduction in tuition when you make $150,000 a year? And the guy said, listen, he said, let's figure it out. After taxes, I come home with about $100,000, $110,000. He said, I got a mortgage. I got real estate taxes. I got to pay insurances. I got to pay for food. You know, I have to pay for all the necessities. Forget about the vacations. There's no money left. When you calculate tuition, just in elementary school, on average of about $18,000 a year per child, he said, I just can't afford it. And this is when I heard this story, we realized that something has to be done. And we looked at different ways that other areas of like colleges, how colleges do it. And there are ways such as endowment funds that we need to put money back into the yeshiva system in order for education to be affordable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so before we get to your initiative, talk about what made you get involved. Were you on a board? Were you involved in the operating of the yeshiva?
No. As a business consultant, you're always looking for ways to solve problems and issues. Like we did with the insurance, you know, with the insurance for Rebbeim, I had been approached by somebody that says, you know, a couple of people actually, that says we need to raise money for this almana, for that almana. And I realized there has to be another way. Same thing here with the tuition. There has to be another way. We can't just afford for the tuition to go up and up and up. And as a consultant, I just try to use my business experiences to figure out how to make this thing affordable, how to make tuition affordable.
Okay. Before we get to the solution, a little bit more about the problem. You say that the cost of tuition keeps on going up and up and up. Was there ever a point in time in the modern era that tuition was affordable? And do you have any good explanation for why the cost of tuition keeps on going up much higher at a much faster pace than inflation?
Well, as someone who's not in the system, when I say not in the system, in the school system, I can't say specifically why it goes up. Statistically, tuition doubles every 7 to 10 years. That's a statistic. So knowing that as a fact, can you imagine if somebody is lucky enough to make $150,000 a year, well, he would need to make $300,000 plus in order to keep up with the rising rates of yeshiva tuition. Mm-hmm. That's just asking too much.
Right. And it's just not sustainable.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Now, the schools are going to say, listen, it's not like we're doing well. We're charging more money, but we're not doing better financially. We're not able to pay our teachers or rabbeim market rates, you know, compared to what's out there in the private sector. And they're also saying that their costs are going up astronomically. So is it something on the school side, mismanagement? Is there any reason on that we can see as to why their costs are just out of control?
My only answer to that, because I can't say mismanagement, because I don't know. Like I said, I'm not in the school system. However, I think it's less and less people can afford to send their kids. They're getting tuition breaks, which means those who pay full tuition are paying for their kids and somebody else's kids.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, you know, when I originally did this thing, that was the only reason that I can put on, you know, to figure out why tuition is going up so much. And the truth is, because we're pricing so many people out right now because of the high costs, it's going to get more and more expensive because less people can afford it.
Mm-hmm. That's a very interesting observation. That what's happening is the reason why tuition is going up is because the financially well-off families are subsidizing the cost of educating the many, many families that can't afford full tuition.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. In your endowment fund description, which we'll link up in the show notes, a really, really very thorough description of how this program works, which we'll touch upon a little bit soon. But over there, you quote research conducted by the Independent School Management Board. They suggest that schools have to raise tuition 2% or more above the overall inflation rate. So if the overall inflation rate is, let's say, 2%, the schools have to raise tuition by 4% in order to keep pace, in order for them to be financially, to keep
independent.
Financially independent. So it's clear it's double the rate of inflation. That's what tuition increases have to be. So this is something that seems to be endemic to the education sector.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. So let's get a little bit, if you could give a brief overview of what your idea was and is, your idea, the endowment fund idea, and how it works, without getting too detailed, because people who want to see the details could read the plan, which we're going to link up in the show notes. But if you could just give a brief overall of how the plan works.
All right. The idea is that each yeshiva should become self-sustainable and not depend purely on the parents. So what we want to do is every yeshiva should open up an endowment fund. An endowment fund is something where you contribute to the fund and you live off the interest off the fund. You can't touch the money once it goes into the endowment, but you can live off its principal, off the interest. So, for example, Harvard University has one of the largest endowment funds in the country, hundreds of millions of dollars. Can you imagine what it would spit off a year?
I think it's actually in the billions.
It's in the billions.
Yes.
Okay, then you're way ahead of me. It's been a while.
They're way ahead of all of us.
Yeah, Yeshiva University many years ago had a very large endowment fund. But you see, amongst the collegiate level, it's a little bit different. And they use the interest that's the endowment fund spits off, they use it for other things. What we want to do is make sure that if Yeshiva has enough money, it spits off X percent of interest, that this should help subsidize tuition. That's the basic understanding of the endowment fund and how the endowment fund should work going towards Yeshiva tuition.
Mm-hmm. Is that how universities use their endowment fund?
That's not how they use it. That's how they do it. Mm-hmm. A Harvard University doesn't lower tuition, but they'll do other things with it. Mm-hmm. We have to outthink them and say, you know what? If they can do it, we can do it, and we need to do it. Because we got to help the parents. Because if tuition is an average of $17,000 a year, can we really afford $30,000 in 7 years? So we need to come up with something that we have to make ourselves independent.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So how would it work, the endowment fund? Where would the money come from, and where would it be held?
Okay. What we're saying is every yeshiva, or most yeshivas, have a board. And it used to be many, many years ago that tuition, when a yeshiva needed money, they would go out to the non-religious, and the non-religious helped support yeshivas. What we're trying to do is go back out and capture that money. You see, the non-religious have become, and even some of the religious people, they don't want to give the tuition anymore because they're going to be giving money. I shouldn't say tuition. They're going to go back, and they don't want to give money to a school that can't sustain itself, plus has to go back 6 months just to pay the rabbeim. It's very hard to go to a very rich guy and say, here's what we want you to do. We want you to give money, and we want you to pay the rabbis because we haven't paid them in 6 months. What they understand is endowments. The largest endowments right now, or I'm not saying this correctly.
Right, the largest recipients of financial of donations. Is that what you mean to say?
Yes, correct. Are going to museums, hospitals, libraries, and these are Jews. That's where their money is going. Why can't we tap into that market and say, why don't you give it to our yeshiva? Give it to our school. It's the link between being Jewish today, tomorrow, next year, and the following years. But we haven't given them the stuckabox of the 21st century. That we haven't done. Mm-hmm. And we've alienated these people. Mm-hmm. And we need to come up with something that they can understand, that they will have a chelek, a portion, in this school forever. Mm-hmm. That's something that the rich understand. There's trillions of dollars of Jewish money out there. We just need to capture 1% of it. And again, I'm not talking about from money. I'm talking about Jewish money. We just need to get them to give it to us, to the yeshiva world, and get the yeshiva world to do something that's very productive with that money.
Mm-hmm. Okay, how willing do you think the non-from wealthy Jewish community would be to donate, contribute to something that's essentially a religious institution. As you know, the secular Jews are becoming increasingly alienated from their Jewish heritage as the generations go on, and they become very liberal and very anti-religious. Do you think that there is a sizable enough of a population of wealthy Jews that would contribute to a yeshiva system?
Let's assume it's 1%. So what we said before was 99% don't have to give. We need 1% to give, and probably 0.5% to give. Mm-hmm. So we're excluding most of them. The way it should be approached is that you have a board on a school, and they keep the school running day to day. Get another board, a board of businessmen, of doctors and lawyers, of accountants, to go out there and try and find people who they can sit down and talk to, and make them understand how important it is to the yeshivas, which is the future of the Jewish people. Will it be easy? No, but it will, like I said before, it's the sucker box of the 21st century. We can't keep going to the same people over and over and over again. It just doesn't work. And that's why we need to find a new way to get money. Mm-hmm. You know, I spoke to a couple of these rich guys and financial advisors, and all the financial advisors of people with millions of dollars say this is the greatest thing you can do, is open up or start an endowment fund. Mm-hmm. Because not only do you have a portion, of the school that goes on, the chelik in the school forever, mm-hmm. but you also get tax deductions, and they're going to give the money somewhere anyway. So why not give it towards Jewish education?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Sounds like a great idea. And where is the money? The money is kept in a separate account, obviously. The school has no access to it, right?
The school should have no access to it. There should be five to seven fiduciaries that sign on the account that will become responsible if any of that money is taken out, any of the principal is taken out, or the interest is used for things other than reduction of tuition.
Mm-hmm. So that
it should be noted that we're not taking away the job of the executive director. The executive director, who needs a school to run day to day, we're not taking away his job. But we're going to make it in the future much easier. Listen, this isn't for me, and it may not be for you because we're a little bit older. But we got to do this for our grandchildren.
Right. Yes, absolutely. It's already extremely difficult for a family to survive on a middle class salary, given the cost of yeshiva tuition. And it's a program that's there specifically dedicated to lowering the cost of tuition should be something that helps a lot of people at one time.
Correct. Correct. And if we don't do this, if we don't, chas v'shalom, do something, you know, there are a lot of people who are waiting for vouchers, and they've been waiting for vouchers and waiting for vouchers forever.
Government. They're waiting for the government to help.
The government vouchers, and they'll still be waiting for it, you know, in many years to come. But we got to do it ourselves. We got to make it happen for ourselves. And this is the best way to do it, mm-hmm. is start endowment funds. Let's go to the rich and give them something that they can understand that they're already doing.
So tell me, you have something in here which is an incentive program for the school. Obviously, to raising money for these endowment funds would fall on the school initially. Is that correct?
The raising definitely would fall on the school and this new board. You know, there was the Samus Foundation in Seattle, just to bring that up for a second, where they subsidized tuition. And the enrollment in the schools went up tremendously. And they subsidized tuition, I think it was for 10 years. And it really did well. But I think there was a Samus Foundation that was doing it by himself, and eventually it stopped. With endowment funds, what we're trying to do is appeal to the very wealthy people and say, listen, take X amount of dollars and put it aside. And if yeshiva reaches a goal, you give a yeshiva a certain goal that if they reach X percent of their budget, the rich, let's say the frum guy will say, I will give you 10% to go towards your endowment, 20% to go towards your endowment fund, if you reach a certain amount yearly. So let's say yeshiva has an annual budget of $1 million. If you put away $100,000 in an endowment, I will give you X amount of money towards that goal. If you don't reach the goal, we can't give you anything. Now, what's the incentive for the rich guy? The incentive for the rich guy is that he is making, let's call it money, which is mitzvahs, on his money. Because he has the ability to, it's like a lot of tzedakahs happen, do this way. If you reach a goal of $50,000, they'll double it.
A matching campaign, right?
And this is what they need to do because, you know, we're targeting the same guys over and over and over again. So you have a guy, I know for me, my kids are done with tuition. I'm done with tuition. My kids have all graduated. The yeshiva comes to me. I'm really not that interested in giving to yeshivas. I have other things that we need to give to. There's a neum and there's people who need a refuah. This is what we're giving to. But if you came up with a plan that said this is a matching plan and I will force the yeshiva to reach, let's call it 10 to 15% of their annual budget, it's a win-win for me. And it's a win-win for the guy who, for the gevir who wants to give a lot of money. And I'm talking now the frum gevir.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a win-win for him.
Mm-hmm. So after... At what point does a school technically have enough in their endowment fund that they won't have to charge tuition or only have to charge a minimal amount?
Well, it's a good question. I would say at this point, if the interest rates if the market goes over 10 years, it should average about 10%. If you have about 17 to 18 times your annual budget, and I'm just doing this off the cuff, that should be enough to really make a dent in yeshiva's tuition. When I say really make a dent, come close to not wiping it out completely, but if you're doing 17, 18, 19% of your annual budget within the endowment fund, and you're averaging about 10% over 10 years, that's a lot of money. It should really make a dent mm-hmm. into covering tuition.
Right. And is that too optimistic of a return?
Over 10 years?
Well, to say that you'll average 10% return.
Over 10 years. A 10% return over 10 years.
Yeah.
You want to say it's a bit optimistic? Fine. 8%, 7%.
Mm-hmm.
If you do it, you know, you do it in the market.
Do it in the mutual funds and you know, conservative
right.
investments.
Intelligently.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. When you know, if we're going to target 15, 20%, well, we'll have a Madoff situation all over again.
Exactly. And it'll be hard to raise money for that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So, Now that we have the details of the plan, and it sounds like a great plan, so tell us your history. You've been working on this for a while. What was your initial steps in trying to get this adopted?
It was at the beginning. The major cities were very difficult. Everybody likes to make Shabbos for themselves. What I was trying to do is get the couple of Gevirim to sponsor their neighborhoods. So, for example, get a couple of the Gevirim in, just using this as an example, whether it's Muncie, whether it's Manhattan, whether it's Queens, whether it's Long Island, to say, we will pool our money, and each yeshiva is given their budget, and if each yeshiva meets their budget, then a portion of our money will go towards that yeshiva. One of the reasons it wasn't successful is that a Gevir says, I'll do it, but I don't want my money going to this yeshiva, or I don't want my money going to that yeshiva. It became a problem because everybody wanted to pick and choose where the money went. I was hoping, and I'm talking about yeshiva, from yeshivas, I'm not talking about day schools, I'm talking about yeshivas. That was one of the major obstacles I came across. The other major obstacle I came across was that there were certain gevir who said, if I don't give the yeshivas money for tuition today, they're not going to survive. So I need to pay them today. Mm-hmm. To which I was trying to tell them, because the frum mind today does not understand endowments because it's something so foreign to them. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to get them to portion certain monies just to go for the endowment. Mm-hmm. Because otherwise the system's going to break. So we can't live in a welfare state today. We got to put money aside for tomorrow. And a lot of the Gevirim, at least in the major cities, didn't understand. Now, in smaller cities, we were able to get them to understand the situation. Everyone was just afraid to be the Nachshon. No one wanted to be the first guy to do it. So it's a very good idea, but I was unable to execute it at the time.
Mm-hmm. Did you go out and get any gedolim to sign on it, any das Torah, some rabbinic approval so that they could give it some fuel?
No. When I started the insurance for a Bayim program, I didn't, this goes back 10 years ago, I did not ask for any haskamas. Why? Because if you did it, that's a haskama. I was saying every yeshiva should give their rebbes $250,000 worth of life insurance, which should cost about $300 a year per rebbe. Mm-hmm. The yeshiva of Novominsk, the Novominsk Rebbe, loved the program. He gave each yeshiva $900,000. Each rebbe, $900,000. Did I ever ask for haskama? No. But that was his haskama. Right. He did it. Mm-hmm. This makes sense. And did I ask for haskama? No. But I don't think I need
you,
one.
You don't need one.
Yeah. Because it just makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you spent time. You spent money on ads. You worked hard on this.
Yeah, I spent a lot of money on full page ads to go out and try and get this thing accomplished. Mm-hmm. I gave up for a few years, but I think it's time that we get back into it, because if we don't, the system's going to break. If it hasn't already broken, it'll really break.
Yeah, I mean, it's frightening to think about how long this economy, this depression or recession or whatever you want to call it, as a result of the virus and the whole shutdown of the economy, it's frightening to think how that's going to affect our yeshivas and our educational institutions, because right now they're living off of government money, but that's going to stop very soon. And there's no question about it. Almost every single sector of the economy has been very hard hit from the coronavirus. And there's no question about it, that our frum donor community has been affected to the point where they're going to have to slow down their contributions. So, you know, it's frightening to think of how that's going to affect our schools. And what you were saying, and this is like a wake-up call, a very strong wake-up call. We got to do something. We have to secure our institutions by having a reliable source of funds to keep us going, even when times are hard.
Could you imagine? And everything you said was right on the money. Because you imagine if these yeshivas had started an endowment fund way back when, and they still had an income coming in via the fund. And this isn't going to happen overnight. It's going to take some time to build up the fund. But you can get to the non-from. You can get the unaffiliated. You can get to them. Just give them something that's tangible, that they can understand. If you could tell a guy, listen, you're going to give $100 million to a museum. Take $5 million and give it towards education. That's something that they can understand. Mm-hmm. We're just not doing a very good job of going after them, if any job at all.
Right. Yeah. So could you describe like a typical interaction that you had with a school when you present them with this idea, you present them with this plan? What's their reaction?
The reaction was, great, bring me the money. Just like that. And I said, but don't you understand? It's going to take work on your part. That's why you got to get a board together and to figure out how to go after these big monies. How did Yeshiva University do it? How did all these other places do it? Maybe you can go to your alumni, but alumni's parents, alumni's grandparents. That's one of the ways Yeshiva University did it, and said, listen, I know you're out of the tuition business because your kids and grandkids are already grown up. But what about giving money towards our endowment fund? There are ways to get it done, but if the yeshivas keep sitting on their hands and saying, I just don't know what to do, that yeshiva, God forbid, may not be around in a few years.
Right.
So instead of just saying, what can you give me? Let's figure out what we can offer to mm-hmm. people that'll make them want to give to Torah education.
Right. And the idea of an endowment fund is something that is very appealing for people to leave in their wills.
There, not only to leave into their wills, there's also, you can set it up via charitable trusts, where let's say you say to the yeshiva, and I'm not an insurance guru, but if you say to the yeshiva, buy a policy for me, mm-hmm. name the kids as the beneficiaries, mm-hmm. And the excess money goes to your endowment.
Right.
In other words, let's say a guy has $1 million. He splits it up between $500,000 per kid. Now, what I believe a charitable trust will do is, a guy says, you know what, I'm going to take out a policy on myself for $2 million. Mm-hmm. And it'll cost me X. Yeshiva, you buy the policy for me. And that'll give each kid more than the $500,000. And the remainder goes to the yeshiva. Mm-hmm. There are different ways to do this. And one of the things I would do if I was a yeshiva is that I would go to these financial advisors and figure out the best way to get it done. And the most appealing way to get it done, so you curry favor with the rich people and give them, and I keep repeating myself, this is the Stucker box of the 21st century. Asking them for $5,000, it's not appealing to them. And I'm talking about the non-from. Right. The guys with the big money will give. We just got to give them a reason to give.
They want to give smartly. They don't want to just give.
Correct. You're saying it better than I am.
Right. So I want to suggest something. I just thinking of from the school's standpoint, why they wouldn't want to do it. So there's the obvious reason of it's hard. Like they have to actually put work into it. It's not overnight. It's not something you do overnight. They have to actually put strategy into how to approach these wealthy secular Jews. They have to allocate resources that they may not have, like a fundraiser. And it's just right now they're just so busy putting out fires and trying to cover each month's payroll that they don't have the headspace for it. That's probably the primary reason why a school wouldn't be so excited about this. But there's another thing, another challenge for the school. So increasingly over the last couple of decades, schools have gone from being mostly a community institution to become like private institutions, where a private individual will open a school on behalf of the community and raise the money himself or her or themselves on behalf of a group of children that they're a group of a community that they're trying to target and build a school for. So I think there's that fear that if they go and put effort into building an endowment fund that's independent of themselves, they somehow lose control over the school. The school becomes more of a community institution, and it's something that they spent a lifetime building up. They're basically ceding control of the institution, of the Maised, to an independent board that doesn't answer to them. I think that's frightening to someone who worked so hard to build the school.
Well, the way the plan is constructed is that if you want to give money towards the endowment fund, that money that goes into the endowment fund, those books have to be open to the public. So if yeshiva doesn't want to do it, that's their problem. But the endowment books have to be opened. So if I want to give $50,000 to yeshiva towards their endowment, I want to see what they've done with their endowment fund over the last number of years. So if he said, listen, I've taken no money in, I've reinvested it, so I can reach a certain point where it's going to spit out a certain dollar amount, that to me is very appealing. If they take out a certain amount and it goes towards tuition, that's very appealing. This money is not to be used to buy desks, pencils, chalkboards. It's not to be used for that. And that's why those books have to be open. So if I, as a giver, want to see it, I have every right to see it. Not the regular books from the yeshiva, but the endowment books have to be open. Mm-hmm. So if that's something that the yeshiva is afraid of, they may not get the necessary funding through the endowment that they need. Mm-hmm. But that would be their issue.
What we were saying before, the fear that a school might have, or the owners or the operators of a school might have, if there exists a very sizable endowment fund that basically covers 75 or 80% of their annual budget, is that a real fear that they really lose control over the school policy because the school is funded without them? They don't really need the owner or the executive of the school to do anything.
The executive director will always have a job. He's got to keep the school running. But could you imagine, Halavai, we should get to a position where 75% of the school is being run correctly. And 75%, I should say, is covering tuition. We'd be in utopia. This would be fantastic.
Right.
Would a yeshiva be nervous that they're losing control? I can't answer that. I don't know.
Like for example, if a school wants to have a policy over the level of frumkeit for the families that they want, they want only a certain demographic, a certain segment of the community, and the board is going to say, you know, we have this endowment fund, and you're excluding, the whole different segment of the community. It's not right. We want those kids to be accepted as well. Or we want, let's say, even kids that come from homes that are not Shomer Shabbos, or the religious level is not as high as something like that, where it's a legitimate fear, a legitimate concern, but they really don't have control because the school's money is coming from the endowment fund.
Can you imagine in such a situation, you have four different types of yeshivas, and everybody participated in the program and everybody was successful? Then you wouldn't have to worry about it, because each kid would go where they feel is best for their child. If you have one yeshiva and it's a very right-wing yeshiva and the kid is not as right wing. So what you're asking me is, would he, because yeshiva tuition is reduced, he would want to send these kids there where the other yeshivas, which he would naturally fit into a lot better, they did not enroll in that program.
Right.
Is that what you're asking?
That could be a concern. Because that in that case, a, you know, well, you're sure. excluding someone that, you know, the board might say, what right do you have to exclude them?
Exactly. Yeah. And so what's the worst case scenario? Somebody gets someone who is not as from gets a fantastic Torah education.
Right.
That's the worst case scenario.
Well said. Well said. Yeah. Okay. So before we go, let me just ask you, you're a consultant, you think of ideas for businesses, and when one idea doesn't work, you come up with another idea, or you consider other ideas. Have you heard of any or considered any other ideas, totally different from the endowment fund, that would also help in terms of bringing down the cost of tuition for Jewish families?
None that I can think of.
Okay.
None that, because this is a tried and true program. I didn't invent endowment funds.
Right.
It's done on the collegiate level with hundreds and hundreds of millions of billions of dollars. So this isn't something that Jeff Kirschbaum created. We're just saying, hey, if it works for on the collegiate level, why can't it work on the yeshiva level, on K through 12? It just doesn't make any sense why it can't work.
Yeah, absolutely.
But let me just say one other thing, because I'd be remiss if I didn't say it. There was a program many years ago called the 5% Mandate, started by George Haynes out of Chicago. I was the executive director for New York for that program. He was the one who enlightened me, for sure, and enlightened a lot of schools of the importance of endowment funds. So it's not as if I woke up one day and thought about this. He was the one who really enlightened me about it and enlightened a lot of people about it. So I just, you know, it's important that everyone understands, or at least I clear my conscience. This was not my invention. This was his. He's a great man, and he deserves all the credit.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but a big lesson that we could all take out of what you did is that you, as a layperson, not associated with the schools, not involved in the schools, you just saw a crisis unfolding, and you did something about it. You wrote up a business plan. You spent money on advertising. You approached schools. You took the initiative. You didn't just stand by and say, it's not my problem. And if everyone who has a good idea wouldn't just throw their idea on somebody, but actually get up and do something about it like you did, we'd be in a lot better place.
Yeah. It's not our job to finish it, but let's at least start it. If everybody does their bit, their bits and pieces, we'd accomplish it.
Mm-hmm.
Not one guy can accomplish it on their own, but let's all do our part.
Mm-hmm. Jeff, you're an inspiration for all of us, and we really, really hope that something gets done. Your endowment fund does take off somehow, some way, and we should be zeichet to see a day that yeshiva tuition is not a struggle for so many families.
Im yirtzeh Hashem.
You've been listening to Chinuch 2.0, a show exploring the changes happening to how we do chinuch. Chinuch 2.0 is hosted and produced by me, Aaron Parnas. Special thanks to David Lichtenstein of Headlines, who inspires the show. You can subscribe to the show on Apple or Google Podcasts or on our website, chinuchshow.com. For suggestions, comments, or guests' ideas, please visit chinuchshow.com. Thanks for listening.